It's good to see everybody out this morning, and I know that we have visitors with us. We're thankful for your presence, and I know we've all been counting down the days to the magical day, a day we've all been anticipating and waiting for, and that is the shortest day of the year, that we start having more sunshine very shortly, and that has been what I've been aiming for, just kind of survive a few more days, and then we'll have hopefully a warmer weather coming, although we can't complain about the weather. But hopefully we will have longer days before long. And I know many of you are also traveling because of another day. I hope everybody has a good trip or a good time with family. We have family coming in. And Regina and I will be heading out Wednesday to go to, technically it's Owosso, Oklahoma, which is a suburb of Tulsa. And so we are looking forward to that. And be able to see family and be out there, for a number of days and be coming back. I guess Monday after Christmas, that when our plans will be. But we are also thankful for the opportunity to open our Bible study long. And what I want to do is really talk about the home and God's plan for man. Our society has had a massive change, a seismic shift in the last, if you want to count a generation, about 20 years each. If you stop thinking about it from 2020 to 2000, then the 1980 and 1960 and 1940s. That's four generations. And in that time, our societies had massive changes. Maybe a way of illustrating that is I remember seeing a list a few years ago as far as the major problems inside of high schools back in the 1950s. What teachers said was really big problems in high school. And like the top five on that list were things like chewing gum. Walking and running the hallways, passing notes, students being tardy. I mean, those were like the major problems listed in high school back in the 1950s. And of course today, if you ask teachers what's the major problems today in high school in 2021, it'd be something along the lines of getting beat up. Simply the idea of fights in the hallways and drugs, and things on that line. So just show you the changes that we've had. And I thought of that in relationship also to what our topic is this morning. And that is the change that's happened inside our homes and families. As you read through that Ephesians 5th chapter, verse 22 through the end of the chapter, we find that the example of the home is used to illustrate the relationship we have with Christ inside the church. But to a lot of people that example means very little because so many people today do not know what the home is supposed to be like as designed by God. And I'm kind of a numbers person, so I just spent a few minutes kind of looking at some of these numbers as far as marriages and divorces. And just to show you what I'm talking about, and growing up, I'm part of the baby boom generation. And I don't know, I don't think our teacher, I never had a teacher to ask us in class how many of us were from broken up homes, how many of us lived, both our parents, and things like that. We never had that question. But I dare say, majority of my classmates were reared in the traditional family unit. When you stop thinking about that, had both mom and dad working together. Maybe a few of those only had one parent. And maybe occasionally somebody be from a broken home where maybe a divorce had happened. But though that was generally the makeup, most of my classmates would have been from the traditional family unit. And yet we start looking at things like the marriage rate here, and just kind of point out from 1932 to 1946, it has fallen on a pretty steady basis. And during that time period though, from 1932 to 1946, it was 16.4 marriages per 1,000 people in our country each year. And then if you go a little bit farther, you find that again, it has fallen steadily to the point that in 2017, it was actually 6.5%. And then 2019, which is the last year this information is available, is 6.1%. So obviously what you're looking at there is that the marriage rate has really declined on a pretty steady basis to almost, not, you know, it's almost a third of what it was back in 1932. And then also you look at this here, you find that divorce rate statistics, and as you look at it again per 1,000 people here, And the divorce rate in 1970 is actually one of the lowest rates it's been, at 2.7%. And the reason of that is before 1970, you didn't have this thing called no-fault divorce. For a couple to get divorced before that time period, there had to be basically three specific reasons. One was the idea of mental cruelty. It had to be a case of mental cruelty. The second was physical abuse. And the third was of infidelity, in a case where somebody had been unfaithful to the marriage. And so in that case, if you qualify in those three cases, and sometimes couples obviously would maybe lie about it while they're getting divorced, but for the most part, those were three reasons. And after 1970, divorce could be for any reason at all. And so that was a little right there. But then in 1980, it was 7.8%. So again, a pretty good sized increase there in 10 years. And then as you go on, we see that it continued to increase, but the percentage of population that is married in 2019 was 53%. Now obviously, we're talking about second, third marriages, any kind of marriage is involved in this here. And so, you know, just a little bit of half our society is actually married. In 1990, it was 62%. Almost two-thirds were married. And that falls that category there. And then as you go on, in 1970 though, again, that's when marriage rate was higher and divorce rate lower, and you had 72% of the population married. And so you're getting up to really a high percentage when you start thinking, because, you know, you have people that were below their marriage age, and then you have some people that were, honestly, were spouses that passed away. And so, that's saying, that's really a pretty high percentage of the population being married there. And then it's going on, percentage population has divorced though. And so again, we have the marriage rate declining. And yet when you look at the divorce rate, you find that in 2019, that's 14.9%. And that's the rate there of divorce. And again, comparison's sake, and that's why we're really kind of putting this out there. And 2005 was 10%. So it's gone up by a third basically in that time period. And then in 1990, it was 8%. So again, a steadily increase in percentage that is divorced, while at the same time you have a decrease in the rate of those who are getting married. So obviously a lot of people getting married are getting divorced then, what's happening here. And again, in comparison to sake, in 1980, it was 6%. And therefore, that's why those of my generation, and I remember my parents talking about, you almost never hear somebody getting divorced, and today it's pretty common. It's actually very common. And so that shows you as far as the divorce rate. But then, why the declining divorce rate? And that's what's going on here. Well, again, when you look at this here, people are living together. And they had 15% in 2019 were identified in that situation, simply living together without the sake of marriage. And then, people not getting married but living together. Now again, comparison sake, in 2005 is 7.5%. So it's double. But it has literally doubled in the last, you know, 15, 16 years. What we're looking at here. In this category of people. And again, if you start thinking about this here, that means today there are 17 million people classified as living together. 2019 numbers. And I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you, but you get the idea of the trend. And as more and more people are living together, those who do get married often are not really committed to marriage. They get divorced. And it's almost like the old, Seinfeld joke, but it's largely true. And that is, when men go out there and buy a piece of clothing or something like shoes, that is a lifetime commitment. And that is, we keep our shoes, we keep our clothes and our closet until they either rot or simply get burned, or that we get, you know, we get too big for them and then we throw them away. But otherwise, we keep them forever. And I can honestly say, there's things in my closet that's probably been around for like 20, 30 years. And however, when it comes to marriage, that people are not nearly as committed to that as they are to their clothing. And when you go look up a little bit more, you find that the Northeast, as well as areas that you have fewer marriages, but you have fewer divorces compared to the South. And the reason basically is that people in the Northeast, I believe don't value marriage. Well, people in the South tend to think we have to get married, but then the reverse part of that is people in the Northeast don't get divorced because they're not married. But people in the South get married, then they get divorced. So again, a lot not really commitment to marriage. Ironically, one of the Grissom actually seems to be talking more about marriage and the idea of commitment of marriage is the group that we would call homosexuals. Until homosexual marriage came along, that issue, basically I grew up with hearing this idea that marriage is nothing but a piece of paper. That I don't need to have a marriage certificate to prove that I love you. Now, those kind of statements are being made by a lot of people. The minimized importance of marriage. All of a sudden, when it got to be a homosexual issue, then it became much more important again. And so those are the group that seem to be talking more about marriage. And as you look at it, we see not only that, but also what this means is certain things are happening in our society. And not good things. And that is the majority of high school students, by the time they're 18 years of age, are already sexually active. They're already hooking up, as they call it. And so if you're not doing that, in fact, you're looked at as a freak. And if you go to a doctor, maybe a doctor asking a lady, before they run some tests, are you sexually active? Do we need to run a pregnancy test? And if the young lady would say, no, you don't need to run a pregnancy test because I'm not sexually active, the doctors would probably do it anyway. And my example with, my note with our girls, I'm just using those as an example. And so, it is one thing that's very predominant. And again, this number, a quarter of babies born out of wedlock, what's happening, that 25% already, are single parent children. A quarter of all teenage girls has some form of STD, some kind of sexually transmitted disease, is also a trend there. And basically, there's correlation between poverty and the idea of divorce and single parenting. If you want to know the largest category, group of people that live in poverty is those children and moms or dads who are rearing a child by themselves. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody can be in poverty when they're married and having children, but it means this is the largest category of people. And that's where the correlation is. And then 63% of children grow with biological parents. That may sound good, but consider this. That's actually the lowest number of the Western societies. And that includes Europe and England and all the Western societies. Our rate here in this country is the lowest of all the, what we call the Western industrial societies in this number. And then finally, I'll just give you these numbers here since I'm giving you all kind of numbers. And that is fathers' homes. Okay, fathers' homes have 63% of youth suicides. So 2/3 basically suicides come from fathers' homes. And that, again, doesn't mean that a child may not commit suicide if they have both parents, but again, 2/3 come from that group there. 9% of homeless runaways are from fatherless homes. And that is a high correlation. That's a high number right there. 85% of children with behavioral problems are reared in fatherless homes. And again, as you think about it, you think about the children, maybe some of you are teachers, the children in your classes are presenting problems, just thinking about their background, their home life, and that explains a lot of things going on in their life. And then only that, but also 71% of high school dropouts are fatherless. They come out of fathers' homes, which again correlates the idea of poverty, because they're not getting education. And then 85% of those in prison are fathers from fathers' homes. Now again, that doesn't mean that, you know, if you come out of a home with only one parent, most likely you're going to wind up in prison. But what does mean is when you go to prisons, most likely the person in prison grew up in a one-parent home with only a mom. Or less than that even. And so those are the numbers right there. But when I got to thinking about this lesson, there was something on Facebook a few weeks ago that really got my attention. And this was a picture of this right here. And that is Pete Buttigieg, I hope I'm saying the name right, and his significant other, his partner, I guess they have a homosexual marriage, and they had adopted twins, and this is a picture, and the reaction, though, on Facebook. Now, my reaction, they asked, was reactions, and I saw one or two names and recognized them. Mainly it was along the lines of, you know, this is sinful, this is not what God intends for it. But as I scroll down, I saw a lot of reactions that said something to the effect of, isn't this just wonderful? Isn't this a picture of love? Those children are really blessed, grew up in a loving home. That was kind of the reaction. Which tells me that a lot of people don't understand really what God's design for the home is. They don't understand how it's supposed to work. And so that's what the rest of the lesson is about. And the first thing you need to look at is God intends for one man to be married to one woman. And I know and I accept the fact that we have Matthew 19, chapter verse 9, which talks about the exception, except for sexual immorality. In the case of unfaithfulness, then there's the case of divorce, and then what we call the innocent party has the right to get married. But right, the way that God designed marriage, the way he intends for it, is for you to have one partner. Over in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 2. Now, thus, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, let each woman have her own husband. Now that means that any kind of relationship where you have maybe people again having sex outside marriage, what does that mean? Well, that means that's a sexually immoral relationship. That's not the way that God intends for. He never intended for marriage to be for sex to be a casual relationship. That's never the way God intended for it. And as you go through the Bible, you find that basically even in all three dispensations, this is basically the rule. For instance, in the Garden of Eden, when God made Adam and Eve, and we talk about this being the first marriage that God ever created, in Genesis 2 verse 24, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife and two shall become one flesh. And as you go through the patriarchal age, by the way, I don't read any examples or any case where God said, now in case you can't get along with one another, here's what you need to do, and that is you can get a divorce. We don't read about divorce in the patriarchal dispensation. Now that doesn't mean everybody kept the law as God intended it, and that is had one man, one woman, because we find cases of man's deviation from them. And some of that deviation, for instance, language. And this first person actually is talked about of having multiple wives, and that is Genesis 4 verse 19, and you read that passage, and it mentions those two wives, Ada and Zillah. They had two wives on that occasion, and so as it says there, and so that's a deviation. And by the way, it's not by surprise that as you go on in the next few verses, go down to verse 23, and you find the Lamech boasted about the fact that a man had hurt him, and he turned around and killed a man. And that is, he was not necessarily a godly person. You don't read any godly aspects about him. And then as you go on in the Bible, you find it also talks about another deviation, something that was not the way God intended, Dinah. Over in Genesis 34th chapter. And Genesis 34th chapter describes what happens there. And let me just read verses 2 through 4. If you have your Bibles, you can turn along to that. But in Genesis 34 verse 2, it said, when Shechem the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and violated her. His soul was strongly attached to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. And he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, give me this young woman as a wife. Now, really, right before verse 32, it explains that Dinah goes out to visit the daughters of the people of the land. And so, it's almost like either naive or simply the fact of curiosity, but you look here and you find this man here decided that he's going to take this young woman, and the passage says he violated her. Now, as you go through this here, you find that he then wants to marry her. However, there are repercussions to this. And some of the repercussions was, whenever his father goes to Jacob and talks about getting Dinah in marriage, that she has brothers. And those brothers decided, you know, they weren't content to have her sister marry this Shechem. And so they kind of came up with a scheme by which they killed all the men of the city. But that shows that there are often repercussions when men deviate from the way that God intends for it to be. But then you go on in the Mosaic dispensation, the law of Moses. And you find there again that the law of Moses, that basically God regulated the divorce, the putting away of the wife in Deuteronomy and Leviticus. And that is God intended for, again, one man for one woman, but there were times that God talks about divorce. And Jesus, in fact, in Matthew 19, chapter 6, that you find the question come to him, as far as the question asked Jesus, is lawful man divorce wife for any reason? Verse 4. And verse 6 says, so then when they are no longer, so his answer to them was, so then they are no longer two but one flesh. Therefore, what God's joined together, let not man separate. Now again, that's God's intention. That's God's law. But God's joined together, let them not separate. They said, and why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and put her away? And he said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitting you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. As far as answering the question, is that the way God intended? Is the law for men to divorce wives for any reason? Actually, the answer Moses gives, no, that's not the intention. No, the reason, again, for the divorce, because of what you were doing. It regulated the Jews and the idea of divorce. And as you go on to find, in Romans 1st chapter, it talks about the Gentiles, as they were involved in all the sexual immorality. And so, the downward spiral there is talked about. And again, we see that people deviated, even from the law of Moses. For instance, David. David with his multiple wives. He already had wives, but Bathsheba. And you know, we all know the story here. That he sees her, that he desires her, he calls her to his home, he lies with her, she gets pregnant, and then what happens? Repercussions. And that is, she gets pregnant, and he winds up deceiving, trying to deceive the people, the husband, and eventually killing the wife, killing the husband. And so you just find that, again, that wasn't the way God intended. There were repercussions of what David did here and those actions. And if somebody said, well, okay, so what? So what if people get divorced? What? There are repercussions when men do not follow the law of God. And so here's David and Bathsheba, King Solomon. And again, a extreme example of this here, but we read about Solomon has 700 wives and 300 concubines, and basically they turned his heart away from serving God. Now, a lot of these marriages were really kind of political marriages. And that is, the heads of other countries, you give their daughter to the king, and they have an alliance in those two countries. And so some of these wives, a lot of these wives were in fact were non-Israelites, and they were idolatrous women. And I can hear maybe a wife saying to her husband, Solomon here, saying, why is it you can worship your God and I can't worship mine? Why can't I have my temple? Why can't I have my idol here? And eventually Solomon got turned away from God by that. Again, those repercussions. And the law of Christ, when you look at it, they find that Jesus, in answering them in verse 19, Matthew 19, verse 9, after explaining that Moses gave divorce because of the hardness of their hearts, verse 9, he says, and I say to you, which means Jesus is not explaining the law of Moses now, but this is his explanation, what he's desiring, his law. I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her if divorced commits adultery. That's the only case of allowed for divorce in the Bible. And so here's the case that something bad has happened. You had not been faithful in that case there. But otherwise, then what you're doing is you commit adultery. He expressed this in Matthew 9, 10 verse 9. Excuse me, Mark 10 verse 9. Therefore, what God's joined together, let not man separate. This marriage union is a contract, a covenant relationship you have made with God, promising that to your God, that you're going to stay faithful in that marriage, you're going to stay there and work out your problems until death do you part. And then God binds you together in that relationship. And verse 11 says, so he said to them, whoever divorces a wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if a woman divorces her husband, marries another, she commits adultery. There's just not an easy way, a way of getting around a loophole about this here, and that is that you have adultery relationships that occur because of divorce. And so the law of Christ is very obvious about that. And that is, God intended for one man for one woman, as we start out there in 1 Corinthians 7th chapter. Now, again, as a case here about death, in Romans 7 verse 2 it said, well, a woman has a husband bound by the law to her husband, as long as he lives, but the husband dies, she's released from the law of her husband. And so in that case here, that's when the marriage bond ends, is at death. But basically, God intends then for everybody to be faithful to the marriage. Hebrews 13, verse 4, marriage honorable among all, and the bed undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers, God would judge. And so that's God's intention. Now as you look at that there, so we have the basic idea of the law. But then as you look at this, maybe a step further, you realize that God's intention for the marriage is to have the right foundation. The reason a lot of marriages don't work is not because people get married with obviously with the intent, I'm just going to divorce later on. I really believe a lot of people, when they get married, intend to stay married wherever. Now that's what they want. But marriages do fall apart, and part of the reason is because they just don't have the right foundation. And just like a house, if the foundation is unstable, then it's going to fall down. Well, the marriage is unstable, and this could be a number of things. It could be things like maybe, as Jesus talks about in Matthew 7, chapter 26, now everyone who hears these sayings of mine does not do them, it would be like a foolish man built his house on the sand, and the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and built the house, and fell, and great was the fall. And so how will we relate this to marriage? Well, let's say your marriage is based purely upon the idea of looks. Now, and again, people don't go out to find somebody that they don't find attractive. I mean, they don't want to get married to somebody they don't find attractive. So, and it's okay to find somebody you think's pretty, a young lady that's pretty, or a young man that you think's handsome, or even older, you know, older people apply the same way. But when you just go by just that, what happens when the rain start beating and the floods come start rising? What happens when maybe one of them starts changing? And maybe the young woman, for instance, started having babies, and that tends to put on some pounds. And maybe the hourglass figure is no longer exactly the same. Or maybe that young man that's so strong and has all his hair, after a while, you know, the hair starts either changing or disappearing or does both. And you look over the other person and realize, that's not the same person that I got married to 30 years ago or 20 years ago. What's going to happen then? Well, a lot of people decide, well, you know, I'll just find somebody else. And hence we have the phrase, a trophy wife, where I'm not sure I heard the phrase trophy husband, but kind of the same idea, and that is, I'll just find somebody then that appeals to me on that basis again. And so they had no problem walking away in the marriage. Well, the marriage is based on pure selfishness. What I'm getting at, what are you doing for me? And it's all about me. And that kind of marriage, again, is not going to last. I think young women especially tend to think that if the guy's just self-absorbed and, you know, she'll change him and he'll grow up, things along that line. But after a while, you start to realize some people don't change. It just stays that same way. And eventually you get tired of it. But marriage is based on God. He said, that's the kind of marriage that'll last. Because you're going to have the rain. You're going to have the flood. You're going to have the situation that you cannot anticipate when you're young. Whether it's a child with a terrible disease or death, or you're talking about maybe a spouse that comes up with some kind of terminal illness, you're going to have to deal with those winds and the floods going to start coming. And so if you're not based on the Word of God, then what's going to happen? It's going to fall down. But then as you look at it, then the marriage based on God will last. And the reason is because, first of all, you are committed to God. And so in Matthew 7, verse 24, therefore here's these things, mine does them, I liken him to a wise man built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew and beyond that house, and did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. Now, notice both situations. You have the same kind of circumstance happen. And as you have the rain descending, you have the floods coming, you have the winds blowing and being on the house again. You're going to have issues in your marriage. You're going to have problems that you cannot anticipate. But the person that takes God's word to heart will realize that's the basis of the marriage. Is commitment to God, and the other person's commitment to God also. And both of you committed to God can withstand the trials of life, the things that happen in life. Now, husbands, for instance, the husbands are told in our passage there to love and to nurse and cherish his wife, to protect his wife. Over to Ephesians 5th chapter, when you start reading that passage there, it talks about husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. And you think about that kind of person there, a husband that is committed, that is a husband that's going to stay with you even when bad things happen. Even when health problems, health issues arise. And so that's what the husband needs to be. A wife needs to realize that the husband is provide leadership in the home. And again, that's your duty and responsibility in that home, is to provide that kind of leadership. And you do that by the authority of God. We have to talk about 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. But I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. And we talk about, well, here's the order when it comes to God, Christ, man, and woman. But let's not forget the fact what he's saying is that the man is to provide leadership inside that home. And again, spiritual leadership. So to help his wife go to heaven, to help his children go to heaven. And not only that, but also the wives are told to love and submit and respect their husbands. And again, this is not to be a demeaning idea, but what it means is, again, that you are to place, you know, if you look at your husband, you see this man, that he's devoted to serving God. Then you should not have a problem. This is not a scary thing. In Ephesians 5 verse 33, nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his wife as himself, let the wife see that she respects her husband. If you know your husband is trying to serve God, then to say respect and love and obey should not be a scary idea. But if it's not, then it gets a lot more scary. And so you want to have a good marriage, happy marriage, then be committed to God. Serve Him. And God intends for couples to serve God together. As we read about Priscilla and Aquila, for instance, an example in the New Testament, as they did that. But then let's go one more step, and that is children. And that is children in the marriage. That's where children are to be reared, inside the home. Children come to this world totally dependent on their mom and dad. They don't select their parents. They don't select their environment they're reared in. They come in as innocent bystanders. I'll use that phrase. And therefore, what they are needing is somebody that's going to love them enough to teach them about God and take care of them. And the Bible says things like Ephesians 6 verse 5. And your fathers, not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in training and admonition of the Lord. And that is, you provide food, shelter, and clothing, but you provide a lot more than that. And your time of doing that is very limited. I always remember, I said this before here, I believe, but I remember the Sunday we're bringing our son home from the hospital. And I look back there and there's Regina in the back seat. Eli's in the car seat. I can't see him, of course, because it's turned backward here. As we're going towards home, panic almost struck me and I thought, 18 years. 18 years with this kid. How we don't do this? How we don't take care of this kid for 18 years? And then later on, I had another kind of like one of those flat, you know, where the light bulb goes off type moments. It was when he was 10. And at the point, for some reason, it struck me at that 10th birthday, we're over halfway to 18. And that is, these years are going by fast. And, you know, once you get to 10, those years just take off. And that's because your children are gaining more independence. And then, but not only that, but then kind of dawned on me, really your time of instruction and really getting to the point of helping your children to mold their personality is really about the first 3 or 4 years of their life. And that's when you're the greatest influence, because eventually what's going to start rivaling your influence is going to be their friends and schools and television and things along that lines. And so use your influence while you can, to bring your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And that's what God intended. And so teach your children. Teach them to obey God. Teach them who God is. Ephesians 6 verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. For this right. You know, teaching that their God exists and their duty in life is to obey Him. Honor your father and mother, which is the first man with promise that may be well with you, may live long on the earth. That doing this will provide them with a longer, happier life. And so that's the way God intends for it to work in marriage. And it's honestly tragic what's happened in many homes, in many marriages today, in our society in general. Because a lot of things I just said to a lot of people is radical. That a lot of people out there in our society today had not heard this. And when they hear something like this, they would think, you're talking about the Stone Ages. You're talking about becoming, you know, like, and kind of compared to some kind of middle age, the dark ages. But we have to understand, this is what God intends for us to do. All of us have known families and couples that have ended, you know, one spouse is unfaithful, the marriage ends divorce, and I can't tell you if really too many situations where I turn out good. Always be committed to serving God. I appreciate your kind attention this morning. Now we need to be determined to know God's law. We need to be determined to obey His law, do what God says do. And are you a Christian? And you know, those who may not have not obeyed the gospel, now's the time to start. And here's our, what we need to do. Believe, repent, confess, and be baptized for remission of our sins. And so we can aid you in doing that. Why don't you let us know as we stand and as we sing.